Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this evening's session in Barriers to Belief. So before I get to the actual topic, so I want to mention that tonight's session is dedicated in memory of Avram Aaron Ben Moshe Shmuel Avracha Ira Denisov, father of Dr. Leon Denisov, whose yahrzeit site is this evening. Dr. Denisov is here with us in person. Also, it is dedicated in memory of my Zadie, Dr. Herbert Danziger, Mordechai Ben Pinchas Zechaiah Zechon Lebracha. And as I noted last week, you'll note there's a lot of quotes from his book, which was the basis of a lot of the presentation tonight. So here we go. So that we're going to be talking about men and women, particularly when there's issues in gender roles. So hopefully we'll see some of them. Obviously, we don't have time to actually address all of the issues because there are many, many books written on the topic. So we'll still try and do a brief overview and hopefully address some of the issues and give an approach to generally wrestle with these concepts. So here we go. So first and foremost, is it going? Now it's going. Okay. So tonight's machitzas. Sorry, that's in a bad spot in my bed. Okay, so what is tonight's machitzas? So the first one is, again, question, what exactly is the place of women in Judaism? That we're not going to answer, but that's a general question. Again, it's based on my grandfather's book. Page numbers are there, link is there for anybody who wants to join later. So we're going to talk about which parts of the varying roles of its vote bother people. We'll give everybody a chance to voice their grievances, don't worry. Followed by dealing with certain responses, as well as reactions that can occur and how we should properly deal with it. And by highlighting primarily on two particular parts, the question of the Shiloh Asanis, the God has not made me X, as well as on the question of time by mitzvot, which tend to be the ones where this issue tends to come up the most frequently. And we'll use those as litmus. Again, there's a lot more than just that, but those are the ones we're going to be focusing on this evening. So, if you had a list of restrictive roles or rules that relate to gender, what would you say they are? This is open to those online as well as those in person.
Gender shouldn't mix.
Separation of the genders in what context?
They shouldn't speak to each other. The man should walk in front of the woman.
Okay, things like Altar Masechem and Isha, very good. That's often bothering to people. What else? Anybody else have anything else that they find particularly confusing? Prayer. Right? The fact that we have to be separate seating during prayer. Okay, what else? Why don't women wear tallis and tefillin? Very good. Anything else?
Women show only have women's learning.
Right. Women can't learn certain things. Right. And many, many more. Well, I'll give a full list later. Again, anybody online have anything they want to suggest? If you don't, that's perfectly fine. We're all just very happy people. That's okay. All right.
I would also add that for some segments of the community, nothing is a higher value than sneers. But that's the ultimate pinnacle.
Yes. Okay. Well, I will not actually address that, but I will mention it in passing because that is beyond our time this evening. But yes. Okay. So we have those all in the back of our mind. Okay. So let's get to it. So in the words of my grandfather, General Racha. So again, disclaimer, this was originally published over 30 years ago. I do not mean to impugn any given section of Jews at this point in time. If it happens to overlap with the current reality, I mean, that's a different story. Okay, so the question of the role and status of women in Orthodox Judaism recurs most powerfully and persistently in recruitment efforts, right? Maybe they'll say, you become religious, but you guys all hate women. That will happen. So it's directed only at Orthodoxy, as reforming Jew of Judaism long ago agreed that the Orthodox position was demeaning to women and have modified ritual and liturgy and redefined the position of women overall. So if somebody has, again, so largely that is the case, definitely in the United States of America, that there is no difference between men and women. There are certain places they still have separate seating that are not Orthodox, but those are few and far between. But everything else besides that, the answer is they made it entirely egalitarian for basically all of them.
Also, didn't help in the leadership, like,
correct. Leadership, right. Leading services, women getting aliyot, right? All those things also, they have, it's completely egalitarian as opposed to an orthodoxy where it's not. So we'll have to, yeah, we're not going to be able to address all of them, but we'll try to see if we can get in the first 4 or 5 minutes. And if you want more questions afterwards, you can just, we'll try and get to the main points. So, Firm Judaism, with its futuristic perspective, argues that in the past, Judaism had primitive notions, but has now rid itself of them. So Judaism was nice, but we can change it because we want to. That is the Reform position. Again, Reform in the United States. Again, might be a slight generalization. Conservative Judaism, which places greater weight on the respect for tradition, has had more difficulty with the position, but has followed Reform's lead, as now they are roughly fully egalitarian, as a, at least JTS is. But each individual community will be different, but officially JTS is entirely egalitarian. That was as of 30-something years ago. And still the case nowadays. So, Orthodoxy's view of the eternal truth of halacha is forced to defend a number of practices rejected by other branches of Judaism. My grandfather's list includes the mechitza, the exclusion of women from being counted in the minyan, refusal to permit women the honor of reading from the Torah in public prayer, the refusal to allow women to become rabbis, recitation of morning blessings by every male thanking God for not having created me a woman, and the laws of Nida, which separate husband and wife during the period of each menstrual cycle. All of these are big issues that bother many people, that, again, unique challenges to Orthodox Judaism doesn't really necessarily apply to other strains, again, which refer to North America, more complicated in other regions of the world and how that plays out. Again, but none of these, the list above, are a problem with conservative Reform Judaism, the exception at the moment at their Nation of Women Conservative Movement, though at this point, I believe it's pretty much, you know, gone out the window, and yeah. Okay, but that's what 30 years will do for you. But the rest are pretty much there, and as far as the women rabbis thing is a different conversation that we're not going to get into, and there because much longer than we have to discuss that. So now, examples of restrictive rules, ones that I thought of are, again, as we mentioned earlier, mechitza, minyan, aliyot, women rabbis, the shalosanis, laws of nida. I'm throwing in addition to the list here, time by mitzvot, as well as public roles in general, question the concept of srara, and women not being able to hold positions of elected office as a result, as we don't really hold that so much anymore. Questions of are women allowed to learn Torah or not, as well as the phrase women belong in the kitchen, or sneedas for women like Torah is for men. So again, we're not going to have time to address all of these, obviously. As you can probably tell that those are definitely not true. Okay, so I'll leave those as they are. So now, first, another question is, why do these issues bother us? Right? Why does it matter that there's differing roles for Jews and non-Jews? This slide will be the same from last week, but the answer is the same. We believe in universal values. We believe that people are relatively equal. To have entirely separate, distinctive roles is very jarring to hear that, because you're like, we have male and female doctors, we have, you know, everything else is not gender specific. So why all of a sudden Judaism is gender such a big thing? So that's a good question. So again, a disclaimer. This does not apply for current denominational opinions, especially in Canada. But we're pretending we're in North America. We're in the United States right now, so I can't get in trouble. All right. Okay. Good. So now the important thing is, before we can actually address any individual issue, we have to figure out what is behind these issues. So this is the main crux of this year, is for this point. So hopefully it's clear. If it's not clear, I will repeat it many times. So don't worry. Okay. So if you had to divide the issues, what would be the two easiest ways to divide some of the issues that I've mentioned so far? That nice long list that we had, right? What would be an easy way to divide them? Any guesses? Okay, so the way that I divide them in my head is there are some issues that are sociological and some that are halachic. So for of the list, let's go back to the list for a second. So which ones would you say are which? Feel free to chime in online or in person. Which one of these are halachic? Which one of these sound like they're more sociological? Meaning, so by sociology, meaning like it's the community just decides it, but halacha probably has very little to say about this actually making any sense. Right. Women belong in the kitchen is most definitely a sociological thing. It is most definitely not a halakhically mandated thing in any way, shape, or form. As I'm sure we're all well aware, men are allowed to use the kitchen too. Okay. Right. And similarly, it's for women like Torah is for men. So again, the first instance, so the most famous instance of student Tanasa from our Haftarah this week, Hatznei Lecha Im Hashem Lekecha, right? You shall walk modestly or humbly with God, which is not referring to men or women. It is referring to everyone. So to say that Tzniut is only women's thing, a concept is false. And to say that that's all, that women don't have anything in Torah, they just have Tzniut instead, is also not true. So those are more of a sociological construct, not an actual halakhic basis for that.
But like for the sota that they say, I'm trying to remember here, and things, you know, so the, that part of halakhic sutras, or is that just
means that that
interpretation?
It's related, as an IE, we learned so many halakhot about Tzniut from that process. But IE, what you do to her, things that you wouldn't normally women wouldn't have had exposed or been doing, and that's why that process is different than from the standard. That's an example of a mitzvah that is for, that is based on a woman's actions, and there's no parallel for men. So it's actually the, there is no mitzvah sota for men. It's only for women, ironically. But anyhow. That's a separate point. We're not going to go to talk about Sota this evening, but point being that on the list here, so certain ones of them are like the last two sociological, the rest will need to be dealt with halakhically because there actually are halakhic questions surrounding them.
I don't see a really big one yet. If you know, it's a huge, if a man won't give the get, there's no real solution. If a woman won't receive it, there is a solution.
Well, I mean, functionally not rabbinically. We don't let you forcibly give a get to someone who's unable to accept
it's
it.
It's not equal.
Agreed. So that is another example of inequality that you have, that began as a halakhic challenge you have to resolve, as opposed to it being a, so that's clearly in the halakhic realm. So now let's go through some examples of sociological versus, again, just before that, mentioning a particular topic here, difference between sociological constructs versus halakhic challenges, and also the way that you would react to them. So if you'll make a sociological construct, meaning it's a virtue, a function of the community, and it's not a function of a actual tried and true halakha or pasuk or anything else, so then the way that you react is different, because you're, it'll very much depend on that community. Some communities will have the issue, other ones will not. Also, it can be relatively easily changed or explained as to, why they sociologically develop in this communal structure. You can explain very easily. And it also can also be relatively quickly changed because it's like, well, this was a nice idea. Now it's upsetting. Okay, the end. Also, it's not inherent to Judaism. It's a specific to that community. So then that would mean that if, let's say, if community in who lived in X place had some weird, you know, communal structure that you didn't like, you would move somewhere else. And then you'd be happily Jewish, everything else the same, and not have that issue anymore. Easy peasy. Let's say place always liked wearing pointy hats. You hate pointy hats. You think they're ugly. So when you move, you no longer wear the pointy hat. Nice and easy. All you have to do is move. Styles are different. No longer a problem. Okay.
Can I ask something?
Yes. Let me just finish the list and then we'll get to your question. Okay. So let's first lay out the two of them and then we'll get back to your question, Ruchama. Okay. So again, often sociological constructs or either practical or based on historical conditions, considerations, which means that they may no longer actually apply, depending on the mitzvah, on the facts on the ground. And also, again, because the source is communal, if you switch communities, it will most likely fall away. Conversely, something that's a halakhic challenge. Well, sometimes they do differ on community. You know, Ashkenazim versus Sfaradim, Edut Mizrach, Chabad. Insert your name of your favorite subgroup and where they live. You know, Hasidish, various types of Hasidut. They do come across a little differently, so they might be slightly different, but again, overall, dealt with roughly the same. They require a serious effort in addressing and resolving because halakha, as we mentioned before, is unchanging. By unchanging, meaning we assume that you don't simply just like wipe it away if you don't like it, but halakha is a living, breathing legal system. Also, the problem isn't the community, the problem is becoming God and the traditions we have from God, as opposed to, you know, oh, it's that person's fault. You can't really say that in this scenario. Okay, so yes. Ruchama, you had a question.
Today, we decided if somebody is Jewish, if his mother is Jewish, In the Bible, it's not mentioned. It's always Abanim shel Yaakov, Bnei Israel, and not the mother.
So, okay, so that is a discussion from the Gemara. That had been concluded in favor of matrilineal descent for whether or not you're Jewish or not. So the answer is it at one point had been a debate. It also a debate that may have ranged all the way back even farther than that. But again, at the time of the Gemara, it was concluded quite clearly that that has been accepted by all Jews all over the world, that we follow matrilineal descent. Anybody here saying otherwise, we mentioned the conservative and reform movements earlier in the talk. Their methods are, sorry, so currently conservative is still matrilineal. I believe reform is either matrilineal or patrilineal, but that is a separate thing and it is non-halakhic. Halakhically, everybody agrees it's matrilineal descent based on Beres Gemara, which I and Nivamot, which we covered in Nefesh Yomi a couple months ago. We will not have time now to discuss that because that is a much larger issue. But that is an example of a halakhic challenge, not a sociological one, because that is part of the fabric of halacha. But good question. Okay? So now, let's get to the question of an example of a sociological construct, which is loosely related, which I mentioned in passing before, about women's place being in the kitchen. So, again, the quote from my grandfather's book, so we'll skip to the juicy part. So, again, this issue is an issue in women's schools, in terms of, again, in men's yeshivot, it doesn't come up so much, because men, for better or for worse, are more concerned about themselves than about what is the role of a woman that I theoretically may meet one day. So it doesn't come up as much. But if you're in a seminary, it's like they'll be like, hey, what do I do now when we all these mitzvot and stuff? And like, I can't do some. And it's like, you should probably answer that one. So here's a story that occurred on Saturday night in 1976. So this woman who's considering becoming Orthodox was at a Orthodox family for dinner for Shabbos. Woman one, Judaism puts women up on a pedestal, meaning positively, like they worship women. Woman two, this is the one who is not yet religious. Some pedestal, it all sounds fine, Shabbat and family and togetherness. But when he was sitting like a king there at the table, she was running in and out like a good little servant. Woman one, being the one who is the host who's religious. Give it another chance. You don't understand it. Woman two, I've seen enough. If this is Judaism, it's not for me. So that is an example of an entirely sociological construct that is very bothersome to many. That to say that the man can simply sit there, put his feet up on Friday night while a woman has to serve everything, that would be terrible. When I was growing up, I'm one of four boys. So my mom would say, I cook all the food. Now you guys are going to have to serve it. If not, there's no food for dinner. So we served it. And since then, we've all learned how to cook. And thank God, our food is not so bad, or so I'm told. So again, that is a very much sociological reality that, again, still exists in many communities, but that is no hard and true rule. Again, you can decide who cooks dinner or is the one who's currently serving as the butler. It's entirely up to you. That's a family decision. Okay, that's sociological one. We can clearly say that some communities have that issue, and other ones are just like, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, now there's also a question mentioned about machitzo. So sometimes issues slowly go away on their own. So in the mid-20th century, there's something called machitzo wars going on in the United States of America, as well as other places, but it was most specifically debated and discussed in shuls in the United States. You need a mechitza, you don't need a mechitza. It just went on in every single denomination, and even in the Orthodox. Again, so here this is from Lincoln Square Synagogue. So Rabbi Buchwald, who had been the rabbi at the time, reported that in the early 70s. Response to these persistent questions from women, he found necessary to discuss the meaning and importance of the machitza in the synagogue about once a month. So Casey thought that, you know, it's not such a big, every month you had to talk about it, every single month. But then, fast forward a decade or so, by 1980, the issue seemed to have faded. Women seemed to be aware of the machitza, take their seats on the women's side without fuss or need for directions, but the reason for the change was not apparent. So whatever, sociological reason, people decided to accept it as it is, and they stopped fighting. So it's not fully true, because primarily the debate exists on college campuses in certain places in Israel, but overall, for Orthodoxy, the machitza is where it is. Question is, do you want to do a balcony, or you want to do it down the middle, and that's about how it goes.
That's still a huge debate in Shemesh Shemayim, and every few weeks they move it around.
Again, where do you want it to be? But again, there still is machitza. The question is, what's the best configuration for everybody to be able to see and hear, etc. But that's a different debate than should we have one, right? So then, shul configurations. Again, do you want a chet? Do you want it square? Do you want a circle? Good questions, but that's a different discussion. Some women like the mechitza, some don't like the mechitza. But if you're going to make the mechitza, make sure that you don't make the mistake of, if you're going to put artwork, make sure it's on both sides. Very important, just saying. Because women will be staring at it more than the men will, so they should have something beautiful to look at if the mechitza is in front of them, right, and they face directly towards it. Okay, that's your elderly parent, everybody. Okay, so now let's focus more on the question of negative language in prayer. So, right. So this is the question of the initial three of the the three brachot of the shalos, right? That I am not this. So first, let's take a look at what they are, okay, as well as the fourth one. Okay, so they are shalos ani goy, that God did not make me a Gentile; shalos ani avad, that you did not make me a slave; shalos ani isha, that you did not make me a woman. And then there's later on in history, maybe later in the Gemara. There was added on the bracha of, for women, instead of saying shalos anisha, because you can't, because that's a lie, because they are women, they can't say that I'm not one. That would be a weird bracha to make. So instead they say shasanikit, so no, that God made me according to his will. So they don't need to say the negatory, because, well, that wouldn't make sense to say this negatory version of it. So then the question comes in, well, A, this is the only time in prayer we have this type of thing of saying a blessing. And the negative, that's not something we even if the other very negative things occur, we don't use this very strange formulation. So the question is, why on earth would you do so? So let's address that, and it'll hopefully fit well into other things we've been discussing. So the simplest reason is the reason that comes along with its first mentioning. So it's first mentioned in the Tosefta and Brachot, right? Tosefta is, you know, the Mishnayot, but I mean, same time as Mishnayot, but just didn't make it into the final cut. So we got collected something called the Tosefta. So, for instance, in the Tosefta, it says, when one says Shalos Ani Isha, it says, Isha She'en HaNashim Chavot Mitzvot. Why do we say that I'm not a woman? Simply because women are not chavot as many mitzvot as men. Plain and simple. Okay, and similarly, why Shalos Ani Goy? So, this is a little more complex. Again, it's not as simple as simply numerical number of sins. So it says, Goish Nemar Kol Goyim Kain Negdo FST Nechshavo Lo. So all not, because it's non-Jews, but it's based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which is not very positive, referring to non-Jews, that all non-Jews are like nothing before him, like not in vanity, they're counted to him, meaning because they have no direct connection to God, because they're not part of the covenant. And then last, what's the problem with being a boor? Boor means the same thing in Hebrew as it does in English, so meaning a hard-headed fool. So for a boor out of ignorance is not fear of sin. Right. So again, thankful that you fear that, don't know that we don't act. That's not what we use nowadays. We switch that out for Eved, because that's related to the Gemara. I did that already, so don't need to worry about that.
Using that same logic, Kohanim have a huge number of mitzvot that we don't have in Israel. Why does the Kohen say Shalom Hashem Israel?
It's a good question. Best answer is it's too small of a number to be significant. Kohanim make up of the population, less than 10%. To make a bracha just for the 10%, to say in the negative, we'll get to why we'll see why specifically these three later. What's a good reason? That I think will be the best answer. Because you're at other reasons, you could add more shalom sanis. Why only three? Again, why if you could have added, you could have said bor and aved, right? Why do you want to keep it at three? We'll get there. Okay. So again, so the simplest thing is, again, Talmud Yerushalmi says, why is it Shalos Ani Isha, right? She'esha mitzvah al mitzvot, again, because women are not commanded in all the mitzvot. So Yerushalmi and Tosefta seemingly say it's just based on number of mitzvot. Plain and simple. Again, Goy has only seven. A right, seven Noahide laws. Then when you get to the, and then when you get to somebody who's a Jewish slave, they're also exempt from any mitzvot. And then women have, again, they have more mitzvot than the slaves do, but they still have limited number. Yes.
I would have been happier if they had something positive about me. The other thing is, if you go
correct
to shul, okay, I go to shul and they say the Baruch Adonai, everyone says Amen. So what am I supposed to do when they say the law is salvation?
Amen. I'm glad you're not a woman either.
What?
I'm happy that you are who you are. You should say Amen. We'll get there. Okay. The answer is you say Amen, and that's fine. Whether or not that would, if you were trying to be able to say for a man saying Shalom Shishu, would mean you shouldn't, you need to say Shesana Ketsona, it was a separate question, halakhically. But again, way too far afield that we are not that. Yeah. Okay. So let's just, okay. So now an example of, so as we can tell, this is relatively this is troubling. So it's not new. Again, 40 years ago at Ar Sameach, they had a Jewish learning exchange program. And the question was, what to do with it? And so part of this came up. Teachers gave various different reasons, but the reasons did not seem satisfying. People continued to ask. So then he suggested that to follow that, why shouldn't we be like the conservative and switch out Shlosh Ani'ish, get rid of Shlosh Ani'isha? The new blessing seeks to avoid an invidious comparison and thanks God for having created me a man. Would mean putting one's own existence in the forefront. And why is that bad? To the context of discussion of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, it says better to offer thanks for what existence one has not been made to suffer than to offer thanks for one's existence when one addresses the cause of the master of the universe. So it's easier to say thankful for the not bad than to say thank you for all the good, because so therefore you should do it in the negatory is the preferred way of responding. So now this is a interesting philosophical point based on a Gemara that requires a lot of explanation and went over the heads of many of the listeners, understandably so. But that the point is that there's something to be said with the saying, instead of being just like saying me, 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 it's saying like, thankfully that I'm not unfortunate is also a good thing to say, even though that wouldn't necessarily make anyone happy, because then saying, wait, so you'd be sad if you were me. So we'll leave that aside for now. But a question point that often comes up when answering some questions is that you might not understand it. So Joel in there, who very much enjoyed it and said, I've learned more in these 3 days than all my years of Hebrew school. But here when she was later, which ended up becoming an advertisement for the seminar, of course. But here's what she said a year later. I learned a lot of that seminar. What did you learn? For one thing, the meaning of the blessing that men say, I'm glad I'm not a woman or a dog. I mean, women have their own status. So now, as you can probably tell, it's not remotely what was said at this session. We have no bracha, thank God we're not a dog. And also, parenthetically, this woman did not become Orthodox or adopt Orthodox practices as a result of this overall seminar. So sometimes things go wrong, right? Unfortunately, no blessing compares men or women with dogs, nor was the comment intended ironically. The response indicates that her saying that's what she got out of it indicates that she misunderstood the men's blessing and that her satisfaction with the response to the questions about the blessing had nothing to do with its content, but rather concerned its context, an articulate spokesman, and something that appeared to be intelligent. So she was happy because the rabbi acknowledged it was a problem and gave a seemingly coherent answer, despite the fact that she couldn't repeat it back to you with any degree of accuracy. But she said, Rabbi said something smart about this, and this is what he said. That's not what he said, but she was happy by that fact, though it did not lead to any lasting change. So, on the other hand, right? So that is one example of, you can say the answer, people might be happy just because you gave an answer and acknowledge that it was a problem, even if your answer wasn't necessarily logical to them or to anybody else, it could still make them happy, which is often the case, sometimes attributed to charisma or simply because their feelings have been validated, which is also a very important thing to do when dealing with thorny topics such as these. But the most radically countercultural response provided by Rabbi Krupnik, Dean of Rabbiners Chappelle for Women, a modernistic school, Judaism doesn't believe that all people are the same. Sure, they're all equal in the sense that they are all creatures of God, all made in his image, all having a soul, all descended from the same human line. But women and men are not the same. Men have one role, women have another. If you deny that, you might as well deny the Torah distinguishes the Kohen, the Levi, and the Israelite, or that the Jews are uniquely God's chosen people. All are born into their roles. They don't compete for them. So the answer, so response here being is that people have distinct roles. There's a reason why God gave them distinct roles. To deny there are distinct roles is to go against many various mitzvot and psukim that God explicitly stated. So as far as what those are and what that should be satisfied with them is a different point. But overall, God gave distinct roles to different people. And not everybody can do everything. And that's okay. In short, that's his answer. So this will not necessarily satisfy anybody who wants everything to be equal. But we'll also acknowledge that some people are, let's give a sports example. Some people are, which I assume is normally less offensive. Some people are, you know, have certain physical strengths. Some people happen to be born being, you know, well over 2 meters tall. And are therefore excellent at basketball. Some people are, you know, meter and a half and not very coordinated, and therefore will never be good at basketball. That is simply reality. They're not sad. I mean, they'd be sad, but they'll get over it and realize that maybe I shouldn't be a basketball player. Maybe I should find something else to do because I'm not physically cut out for that job. And then they will, and they'll live a happy life, and it'll be fine. So sometimes you have to simply figure out what your role is because not everybody can do every job. Because that's not how things work in the world. Okay, hopefully that's satisfactory. So that again, that is that reason. Whether or not that act, so that's a general answer to why there's differences in general about women's roles or about men's roles or about Kohanim versus Levim versus Yisrael and things like that. Or Jews versus non-Jews. That each has a given role, not necessarily the same. Oftentimes they are actually equal in significance, sometimes not. Sometimes it feels differently or might feel more offensive at different points. Or more off-putting different points, depending on the circumstance. But the point is that it's not malicious. And
so, yeah. Roles. How would you explain to somebody? And to the woman, God said, "Your urge shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you."
Maybe for the punishment for Eve.
Yeah, but it's
yes.
Not,
so
wasn't just directed at her.
Correct. On the curse of the wind. So that's so.
And he shall rule over you.
So that's I mean, how to relate to that. The answer is that was the curse that God gave them. And it's unfortunate. And that will not necessarily have to be the case, or that's only the case when things go wrong. And it's, the question is it a missive that the men must therefore fulfill that rule, which we do not take it as being a missive to do so, and simply a functional reality that occurs much of the time due to the genetic predisposition and the way that God
created. When you divide the sociological and halachic, that will guide maybe people's sociological roles, that this is a general role that we have to.
But it's not a mitzvah, you don't have to follow it. It's simply stating a physiological reality oftentimes, but again, it is not, there's no requirement to observe it whatsoever. According to, as far as I've ever heard anybody ever say, that is not a mitzvah required.
I have a question.
Yes.
Question is, so the female will say, more or less, thank God Hashem made me what I am, versus why doesn't she mirror the man and say that Hashem did not make me a man?
So the answer, so the answer to that, is, again, we'll get to the answer to that in a little bit. But part of the reason behind that is that we say, again, we mentioned the basic reason is in terms of the number of mitzvot you're obligated in. So it's kind of like saying, somebody's like, oh man, I have to do the dishes. And it's like, well, I don't have to. It's like, thank you. That was rude. So that would be why this one you wouldn't want to say. Again, not that, I don't mean to compare it that way, but it's more like you can get off the hook. Doesn't mean that that's a, somebody say bless over like, yeah, get out of it. It's like, well, that's not good either.
Okay, thank you. And one other thing is that an example I think of something that is halachic that also has social ramifications is deraita is beged, is begadim, or beged isha. And then it translated to, okay, how do you define pants?
Right. So that's an example of the reverse, actually. That you can't wear, meaning that that's based on what's considered to be a man's garment versus a woman's garment. Women, you can or can't wear it if it's a garment of the other gender, like exclusively. There are many times in history where men wore skirts, so, and women did not. So depending on when that was, again, they can, it has flipped. For more on that, please look into ancient fashion trends over the last 3,000 years, but not enough time.
And the final thing is what determines a Jew or a matrilineal descent. I didn't think it was originated in the Gemara. I thought it was from Parsha Etchanan, either in Shishi or Shvi'i, is an implication, and then you can understand it from Rashi, is from Parsha Etchanan.
Right. So Rashi is quoting the conclusion of the Gemara, which is based around the Pesukim there. But in the Gemara is the discussion about is it matrilineal or patrilineal descent. The Gemara discusses it. But that, again, we're going to leave that aside for now. Again, that is a Talmudic discussion with a conclusion. So we're going to leave it in the Talmud.
One more thing about this. I've heard a lot of discussions where people have explained it away saying that women are on a naturally higher spiritual level.
We're going to get there.
My question is, if they're on this higher spiritual level, why are we thinking that we're not women? What we should actually want to be on a higher spiritual level.
Correct. That is a good point. So we will address that when we get there. Again, the key issue, according to my grandfather, is to be not so much that the answers are satisfactory, because as we've noted, they're not really, but rather they're articulately spoken and with proper credentials by somebody who has an advanced sex education and can make it sound reasonable to individuals. It's not necessarily that actually solves all the issues. But the place of women involves not only beliefs, but also actions and rituals. And again, regardless of the theology behind it, the fact that they are different is what generally bothers people, regardless of, no matter how good reason you give, it's still different, and that'll still bother people no matter what you say or do. So, now, to focus more in against Shlomo Sani, so why that phraseology? So let's go with the answer that my grandfather favored. He is based on historical grounds. He put in a footnote, because it wasn't said by any of the rabbis that he interviewed. But it is, again, here it is. It has been argued that three blessings of the morning prayers, which thank God for not created one Gentile, slave, or woman, were added through the list of mornings simply to reject Paul's formulation. In Galatians 3:28, there is no difference between Jews and Gentiles, between slaves and free men, between men and women. You are all one in union with JC. Okay. Right, so this was, again, so for more on that, you can see the article by Heinemann, or look in the Gemaras that are mentioned here. And again, this is one of my grandfather, blessed memory, his friend of blessed memory, Norman Fredman. Okay, so I also pointed out to my grandfather, actually, I asked him this question, and he, so after he said that, I'm like, well, there's also another person that was my grandfather consulted for his book, wrote an article again much later than the book was published. On this topic as well, that is by Professor Yosef Tabori. Also is people here may know Rabbi Yamin Tabori. So this is Rabbi Yamin Tabori, the Rav Racha's brother, who's a professor at Bar Ilan. So he had an entire article about benedictions of self-identity and the changing status of women in Orthodoxy, where he goes to in-depth explaining, of course, let's say about 30 pages, exactly this issue and all the history behind it. So highlights is Plutarch reports that Plato, right? We all know who Plato is, right? Famous Greek philosopher, student of Socrates, reported before his death, he thanked the faith that he had been born a human being rather than an animal, a Greek rather than a barbarian, and that he lived in the time of Socrates. So here, you know, there's a certain set of three that sounds very similar to the question. Again, we mentioned that the issue of boar, so born barbarian, same thing, right? Notice that the thing being created a human. And also the time of Socrates. Again, note this is a triplicate that he was right there before. Also, Professor Bori also points out that Thales, again, another philosopher who lived in the 6th century BCE, is reported to have said that there were three blessings which he said he would bless the fortunes. First, that I was born a human being and not one of the brutes, meaning not a barbarian. Next, that I was born a man and not a woman. And thirdly, a Greek and not a barbarian. So this is the world that corresponds to the goy. Again, the fact that I'm not a non-Jew, that I'm not a slave, and that I am not a female. Again, note that there's, again, slightly differently, But again, we'll note, but you see that this is very similar to the original formulation we saw in the Tosefta before the Gemara, had a slight swapped out boor for slave. So the question is, what does that mean? So this means that there was a statement of identity in terms of negations that was very popular in both the times of the Greeks as well as in the times of the early Christians. So they were busy stating how proud they are to be Greeks and Christians, respectively. Or the Greeks or the Christians, again, were mocking the previous one, perhaps mocking the Jews. And the Jews, on the other hand, are saying that we're very proud to be who we are. They chose those three to directly counter the three that were most popular during their time period. And that is the reason why they chose to use similar formulations, because the goal was promoting Jewish identity, not anything else. So you chose to the best method of thwarting what they were saying by saying your own parallel formulation. And that was behind the origins of the bracha. So it's not necessarily, so we did not mean to offend women or slaves or non-Jews. We simply wanted to be proud of Jews and encourage and start off our days by saying we are proud to be Jews. And we decided to phrase it in that way, as opposed to the way that they do it. So yes, it is a little strange that our bracha is based on, is responding to some extent to a phrase of non-Jews, but it's also not crazy because many times things appear to be reactionary, such as when we added in an extra bracha on Tishbon Esrei because of a slight issue of the slanderers, and therefore we had an entire separate bracha because of the issues that they brought up. Again, that happened. So again, it's not unheard of for an entire new bracha or multiple bracha to be added in because of a new historical circumstance that occurs. Okay, so yes, this is the answer that I personally find most logical. Yes, this will solve the issue of why we say, of that explains Shlomo Sanhedrin. I won't explain the overall issue, but it'll explain that. So now I'm looking at my watch. It looks like we have about 5 minutes left. So I'm going to no longer have any questions until I finish. And I'm going to explain, I'll go longer, but I'm simply going to say all questions till the end. Okay? So, so now an example of a sociological, well, not a halachic one, but it has halachic elements, is the question of who gets to go to shul. So, what do I mean by that? So, a family which has a six-month-old and a three-year-old, somebody stay home with the kids, so who gets to go to shul? So then you'll say, oh, well, clearly the answer is, well, the man has an obligation to go to shul, the woman does not have, therefore the man wins. But then realize, wait a minute, that makes sense on Friday night. But now let's say we're talking about Shabbat day. So what do most synagogues have on Shabbat day? Child care, because they want both the husband and the wife to attend. Right? Also, you may have noticed tonight that the Bayit had a mid-tetzu minyanim. They have one at 7:15 that finishes by 7:45. They have another one at 8:50 that'll finish by around 9:20. So there is no necessarily, so oftentimes there's no actual conflict, just it simply was, we chose out of convenience and we could have actually done something else. For instance, if again, for high holidays, even at night, many synagogues have childcare services. So that way you can go to services at night, not just during the day. And similarly, the question, I'll say on thank God the Bayit has many minyanim. So it is not at all unreasonable idea to say that send the husband to the, or wife, whoever wants to get up earlier and not get the second shift, goes to the first shift. We'll say, okay, one of us is going to go to the early at 7:30, and then we'll trade at 9 o'clock for the later minion, and then we'll both be able to go and we'll all be happy, right? That is a reasonable solution that you could do. Again, not halakhically obligated to, but you could. So the reason why that's not done is for sociological reasons, but halakhically that would be a very laudable thing to do, but you're not required to. So that's an example of there is a halakhic element, but sociologically there are solutions and we actually use them, but only when we deem it to be actually worthy of our own accord, because that's when we decide to put down the money for the babysitter and childcare services, as opposed to when we don't. Okay. So now, again, in terms of halakhic ones, so I mentioned a whole bunch. Here's just a list of some of them. I can send you articles for each one as to explaining each one and why I get for each. But we will, again, interest of time tonight, we will skip those. But then we want to get to the good reasons. So many of the good reasons are listed by a large grouping of mitzvot, namely that of mitzvot aseh shezman grama, time-bound mitzvahs. Positive time-bound mitzvahs. So there are actually only seven of these. Okay. Well, what are those seven? Shema, Tzitzis, Tefillin, Shofar, Lulav, Sukkah, and counting the Omer. And now when I say that they are time-bound, positive mitzvot, it means that they are time, they have a set time to do them. There's a positive act involved with them. And women are not re-included for some other reasons, such as you'd say, what about Shabbos? Women are re-included back. You'd say, but the answer is women are fully obligated, same way the men are, same with Yom Tov, same with Yom Kippur, everything else. You're like, oh, but it's a time-based thing. Yeah, but only for a certain one. So functionally, they'd be only seven. For more on that, again, not enough time to discuss that this evening. But important thing to note is that for almost all of them, women can still do them. With the minor exceptions of Tefillin and Talit, Tefillin because of a question of Gufnaki, whether or not you can maintain a clean body, which is much more difficult for females than it is for men. For more on that, please learn biology. As well as for Talit, it's an ancillary reason of question about a question of Yuhara about haughtiness, which is developed in medieval Ashkenaz. The end. So what more means for both those things, for women wearing tefillin or wearing a talit, that is problematic if you're Ashkenazi, but if you are any other Eidah, meaning let's say you're Eidah Mizrach, any of the many Eidah Mizrach, then the answer is it's like you could if you want, but you can't say bracha. So either you are Ashkenazi and potentially say bracha on it, or you're one of the other various Eidot, and you can do it if you want, just you know, you just can't say bracha because you're not technically commanded. You're more than welcome to volunteer it, but you cannot actively do so. I'm also going to point out that a lot of the things I'm stating now are, again, a lot of the translations and stuff is based on a website from Dirachaha, which I'll get to in a bit as well, more about them. But just point that out, some of the translations are from there when noted. Okay, so now, so as Mark mentioned, accidentally, the question of women are holier, which sounds a lot like last week's comment of that, well, that's why we, you know, Jews are better than non-Jews. And we explain why that's really problematic. And now we're explaining how, so similarly, if you say that in regards to that's why women are exempt, so it's like, oh, that should solve it or not. Right? So either it can very much solve it. Like, see, women don't need it. So, okay, so that sounds very nice. But here's some response from women. If I have missed any, I invite anybody who's male or female to correct me on my not properly quoting responses from women. But here are some responses that have been heard from women. Again, not accurately quoting. This is simply a generalization. I apologize to whichever one have entered to me and I have not properly retold their feelings. So some are like, that's great. Because they're like, of course we're holier than you are. The end. We're good. Okay, so that is, many women, thank God, are very happy with this answer. And that's why they can't do servants vote. And they're only obligated in some, not others. And that's the answer to them. They're happy. Good. If you're part of that group, plug your ears right now. Okay, so other women are deeply offended. They say, so if I'm holier and therefore you're going to be mean to me and not let me do things, not cool. Okay, another group is, I mean, maybe, but I don't really like it. Or the response of like, that makes zero sense. Like, what do you mean I'm holier than you? Like, that, I don't know. There's so many examples where we're basically the same. So I don't understand what that would even mean. Okay, so four short responses to that idea of women being holier. Okay. All right. So now, as far as going back to the question of for the mitzvah stations among grandma, the positive time of mitzvot. So why are you exempt? So the simplest explanation is that it's because of a drasha of the Gemara and Kiddushin, that because women are exempt from laying on tefillin, and it is considered to be the paradigm of a positive time of mitzvah, therefore women in general are not commanded in that. And that's that. It's a drasha from the Gemara. And that's basically it. Why? Unclear, but conceptually, this appears to be the decree of divine will, because halacha is halacha, and seemingly God wanted it that way. Why? Take it up with God. But, of course, that's not a good way to end any discussion, so many rabbis throughout the ages have tried to answer exactly, well, why would that be the case, and try and give a better answer than just because. So what are some other conceptual rationales? Again, this section is largely taken from the website Dirachah. So one is that of Rav Hirsch, namely that women have a certain enthusiasm for serving of God that makes these specific time by mitzvot unnecessary because they don't need the extra reminder and the extra chizuk. They're good without it. They don't need to be reminded because women are simply better than men are. Yeah. Okay. So next is the vet of the Budraham, which is that a woman's strict adherence to positive time of mitzvot may create a tension between her and her obligations to her husband versus her obligations to God. Because when they conflict, that's no good. Some of the fact that why a slave cannot have time on mitzvot, because the answer is his master takes precedence. Oh, because he's a slave to a human master, means that he can't say, "Well, I got to go to shul now." Otherwise, because his master will say, "But you're my slave, so no." So the answer is that's what's built in, is that he's not part of it. Okay, Rav Rebbe suggests that a woman fulfills these mitzvot vicariously through her husband. Okay, so that's another option. But again, that would only work if a woman is married. So that would also be problematic for many years of a woman's life. Tell it to your extent to all 12 year old. Your husband will do it. It's like, I'm 12. So, anyhow, so okay. And lastly, that Rosh Feinstein writes that the exemption protects women's ability to raise children. Still, it allows for a woman to choose for herself to what extent her life is centered on domestic activity and how to use the flexibility the exemption affords. So this reason is the most workable one. That is simply a very practical thing that, again, women are, you know, men cannot give birth, so therefore they are inherently disadvantaged and towards raising of children. So therefore, the women are the one who centers around women having children, raising them. The only problem then is, well, then that was the end reason that only applies once a woman actually married / having kids, and also should fall away when a woman no longer is having children and her kids have all grown up and moved out of the house. So, yeah. So that's why again, all of these have their slight issues, but because absolutely many of these answers are satisfactory to many others. Okay, so now the question comes up with regards to minyan. So we'll do this briefly because, again, it's a much bigger issue, but in short, the reason why minyan are only for men is based on a drash of Ada from the 10 wicked spies. So basically, women are excluded because none of the 10 wicked spies were female. Sorry, women, you're too good. Therefore, we don't end up counting for minyan. Actually, lines up in this particular case. But it's also important to note that in general, for other things, such as the concept of sanctifying God's name in public, or let's say for Brachot HaDrash Melech and saying certain brachot for on Purim, they require 10 people. They don't require 10 men to be said. The bracha at the end of Megillat Esther. So, and also another example of a sociological difference is the question of Tish Friday night versus Samotzi, where assuming you're not Ashkenazi again, for Ashkenazi there is a difference in level of what which would prevent a woman saying Kiddush for her husband. But for anybody who's not Ashkenazi following the Magen Avraham, there is no such problem, in which case I mean that you could vary, such as the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch. I can list you many others who say that it's perfectly fine to reverse it. The reason why they don't is simply because sociological convention. But another example is the question of saying Hamotzi. Can a woman say Hamotzi in the home? Again, on Shabbos, is there any reason why not? The answer is there is no actual reason why not. There is no halachic problem whatsoever, according to anybody. The only question is whether or not it'll be viewed as being weird where you live. And if it is, then that might be a separate problem. But again, that's a sociological issue of people looking funny, not an actual halachic barrier to a woman saying Hamotzi for the family. Which I may note is what my wife does. So anyhow, okay. So now, if any of these things, I did not cover them satisfactorily, I apologize. It's just that I was trying to not take 3 hours. So if you want any more resources, particularly in regards to issues relating to women, so there are many articles written for women by women on a website called Derecheha, which I highly recommend you all take a look at. Again, just type in Derecheha. On Google, it'll come up. They have a short version, a long version with sources both in Hebrew and in English. Again, all their resources are in English, written by very excellent individuals, and they're very thorough. And if you don't like, and they even have, if you want to do further reading beyond their, you know, relatively long things, they will then quote the academic articles or a little bit of halachic tshuvot that will discuss it more in depth as well. Okay. Now that we've broken down the fourth wall, so we discussed a little bit about why these things bother us. We discussed which elements of the mitzvot do run into the gender issue. We differentiated overall to figure out whether or not any particular issue is sociologically based or halakhically based, because your approach to them is very different. We discussed shalos. We discussed the mitzvah of seishas man grama. And we discussed some answers that women don't like. Oh, I really discuss all of these, but here are some that women don't like. Women are better, therefore we are mean to them. Women deserve to live in the kitchen. Don't say that one ever. And or say with interpretation of the pasuk of kol korban al prima that all honor woman is inside. Don't try using that to say that therefore woman's honor is in the home. Therefore she shouldn't leave her home or go out ever. I've actually heard that quoted. So just don't ever say that. Okay. Now, more workable answers. If a woman actually does ask you this question, what should you respond? Again, you could say they're different roles, but they're all valuable. Again, different roles because different people. And you give the nice sports knowledge you gave earlier if they like sports, or figure something else out for another profession if that works better for the even crowd. Okay, I'll also point out that sometimes it depends on which Eidah you're part of and which Shittah you follow. What halakhic opinion you're following can very much affect whether or not you feel oppressed or not oppressed even within orthodoxy. Okay, again, remember, a lot of this is sociological comfort or communally based, so to figure out which one is which. Again, also, that in general, Torah mitzvot, that you can't actually do all 613. Like, you can't. It's physically impossible because you're not both male, female, Kohen, not Kohen, murderer, and murder. There's a lot of things you have to be doing wrong and right in order to do them all. So you can't do them all, and that's okay. For telling you what all those are, certain ones not Kohen can do, but Kohen can't do. We can get, that's a much longer list that we do not have time to discuss, but if you want to have fun, take a look at Sefer HaKanos, and you will be able to figure it out, too. Just might take a look. Okay. Now, so just want to end off by pointing out that next week we'll be discussing the language barrier. So as to why do you need to be speaking Hebrew or not, and when, for various rituals. That is the overall point. Also want to remind everybody that today is the day of giving, Rabbi Drasa Frondov. It is the fundraiser that they do on fundraiser every year. So feel free to contribute if you'd like the actual link. So there is my link right there. Let me see if I can, 1 second. Let me just put it I'm going to put it in the chat. That way you can actually click through. Why is that not clicking? There we go. Okay, I'll put it in the chat for those who are online. If you're here in person, I'll put it back up in just a second so you can see it. There we go. Okay, put in the chat. There we go. Okay, paste. Oh, it just showed up way too much. That did not copy over correctly. Okay, I'll try again in just a second. But the main point is that a lot of these activities and my shirim are because I'm part of Beit Midrash Zichron Dov. And please feel free to donate following the link. Be greatly appreciated. And also thank everybody for coming out, both those who are in person, those who are online to the series. And hopefully next week we'll discuss some more. And again, if you have any questions related to what I've mentioned so far or to what you'd like to talk about next week, please let me know. Okay, so if I didn't quit, so let me just...